Hello, hello, and welcome to What You Think, the drive home from the movie where we're discussing the movie and everything we loved about it. This time, we are talking about, of course, we have our spouses on with us. I have the ever handsome Cole Houston, and we have the ever lovely Drusilla Valicky. And they are joining us today because when you think romantic date movie, you think Godzilla.
Naturally.
And
Because Godzilla's life is just like marriage.
that's right.
It's amazing to watch, but there's usually a wake of destruction behind it.
That's right. There's
Wow.
collateral damage, but it's worth it.
Exactly.
And as always, with every What'd You Think episode, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. We're going to be talking about anything and everything. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, don't be upset if you get spoilers.
If you haven't seen the movie yet, you're a moron.
That's right. That's
It
right,
was the
one.
number one movie for what, the last 2 weeks. If you haven't seen by now, then you're like the one person in the world that hadn't seen it.
Well, it could be that you couldn't get out the last 2 weeks, and you went to the movie, and then X-Men was out, and then you were like, oh, well, now what do I do?
That means you do a double feature if you have any
Double
kind of a brain.
feature.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. You get the big popcorn and you make an afternoon of it.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we are going to hit the ground running, and I am going to, Drusilla, since you are company, we're going to let you go first. Did you see any of the trailers for this movie? And how did it compare with the trailers that you saw? And before we start, also, the four of us did also go see the 1954 screening of the original Godzilla movie. It was at the Angelica Theater here in Dallas, and it was a real treat to see the original black and white movie as it released
In Japan.
in
This was the original
Japan.
Japanese
Yeah,
subtitles,
in
not the
Japan.
American.
Yeah, not the often not seen version.
Okay.
Yeah, this was the Raymond Burr-ized American version.
Exactly.
Well, it wasn't the Raymond Burr.
That's what I said. Wasn't the Raymond Burr-ized.
It was Burr free.
Yeah, it confused me for a minute because I kept saying, you know, where is that doggone Burr?
And so once we do the around on the trailers, we are going to take a step back and talk about the original Godzilla, and then go into comparisons with that. So, but
Yeah, I like the trailer. I thought the trailer was okay. I don't remember trailers. I can't remember my name. But this
it's.
happens so often. It looked very intriguing. So immediately it was like, huh, that seems really interesting. And I think the good thing is that I didn't see the Raymond Burr version. I hadn't seen the original version. I hadn't seen any of them except probably that terrible one that was like, what, a few years ago in
Oh,
the
the
90s.
'90s one.
Oh, 98, I believe it was.
So
bad.
Ouchie.
The Matthew Broderick filled.
Yeah,
And
we're
let me point out before she finishes, this is one of those rare treats in life that you get to take somebody to go see a film that they know. She knew the name Godzilla, and that was the extent of her knowledge. So it was fun to be able to watch it and see her experience the original and then the new one and feel all the excitement of everything that happens without being jaded of all the other things that have come in between.
That's
Yeah,
so true. That's a good point.
that's why I think I liked it, and I was so intrigued because I knew nothing about Godzilla. So I was so excited to see it. So I did enjoy the trailer. I was like, ooh, what's gonna happen? And I didn't know if he was like a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, it's a dinosaur monster thing. But really, in the movie, he's like a good guy and technically a bad guy. So you empathize with him, but I didn't know any of that going in, so I thought it was really clever.
Oh, cool. Well, Cole, what did you did the trailers make you want to go see it, or were you cringing but going as a devoted fanboy?
No, actually, I was impressed by the trailers because they suggested that this was an apology for the 90s version.
There's nothing except for that
I
movie.
know, but it was the best. Sometimes it's the best you can do. Sure, you knocked over the glasses and you broke them all, And the apology doesn't bring the glasses back. I understand that, but at least you know, at least you're making the effort to acknowledge you've done wrong.
It's like a box of new glasses.
That's right. It's like presenting you with a box of new glasses. They might not be the same vintage or the same time. They turn out you wind up you like these glasses better anyway, so you're kind of glad for the breakage. So you know, in a way, that it was a tremendous setup for this because it allowed you to really appreciate this even more. But you know, as far as the trailers went, you know, there was enough there to suggest, for one thing, unlike that first Godzilla, they weren't afraid to say, hey, why don't we have, I mean, who doesn't know who Godzilla is, regardless of where in the world you are? So why don't we just give people two monsters? So, you know, right out of the gate, you're going to get Godzilla plus.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just having to muck around with, well, let's see, you know, the inevitable, impossible fight against Godzilla, who can't be destroyed by any means.
Well, what was cool, too, is mentioning the second creature, in the like the first two or three teaser trailers, they didn't show any of that. So everybody thought
true.
We were just getting Godzilla and nothing else, so then it was like...
That's a good point. Yeah, then all of a sudden you get something flying by, and you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure Godzilla doesn't have bat wings.
Yes.
Or a hang glider.
Right. Right,
hand glider.
But then he goes into your brain. Did they just screw up Mothra?
Yeah, that's true. You are thinking that.
Well, what I got out of the trailer is I got at the end of the day, the reason that you love Godzilla is it's really obviously a guy in a suit.
In the old days, especially.
Wreaking havoc.
Man in suit.
Exactly. And when Godzilla doesn't look like a guy in a suit, you get upset because that's just another boring old dinosaur. But a guy in a lizard suit is Godzilla. And also. With the addition of that second monster, the second monster was very much not a guy in a suit. So you got your modern day CG, see what we can put together that doesn't look like a guy in a suit, fighting guy in a suit.
Well, and what they did that was smart with making the film is while we didn't get guys in suits, they still made guys mocap the creatures.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So since you have a guy that I actually know now, I just interviewed him, named TJ Storm, who's a martial artist, but he was Godzilla in the big fight at the end of the film.
Nice.
And released pictures of him wearing, he literally just wearing the tail. I mean, he's wearing clothes, but he's wearing the tail.
Yeah.
But then he had two other guys that he's doing the scene with, and one of them is using... like the, you know, the arm crutches for people that have, you know, like the legs that kind of buckle. One guy's wearing those to imply the one creature that has the big folded arms, and then this other guy's wearing these big bat wings. So you've got all three versions of the creatures that they actually, so you're essentially getting the modern day version of man in suit without having
an actual
guy on screen.
And that's why you get that sort of, you know, a more natural movement than just something where animators are doing everything.
Right.
See, and I think a lot of times even the best animators don't quite get how physical entities move through space.
Well, and I think I was excited before they even started showing trailers for this movie because I saw Gareth Edwards' movie Monsters that he did in 2010 that made him kind of a star. I don't know if anybody else saw it. That's on this show. I know other people saw it, but and while I wasn't a huge fan of the film, he didn't have the budget really to create these epic monsters, but he used these subtle hints that you knew there was these Godzilla size type creatures. And when they announced he was going to make the film, it's like, this guy already knows how to make this, and he's clearly a fan of the Godzilla, which means it's that passion thing when you bring in, you know, somebody that loves what they're doing. you know there's a better chance that you're going to get something good. And when they started releasing the trailers, and just the posters alone, when they started showing the posters and you had the Japanese symbol behind the Godzilla name, you're like, okay, somebody understands that this needs to somehow be connected to Japan.
Right, right. Well, that's a good segue into talking about seeing the 1954 movie. And I'm going to start with Drew again, since you had never seen Godzilla before. What did you think about that movie, and especially any thoughts you had about the time it was made?
I really, really liked it, first of all. It was a little bit kind of cheesy, and I liked that Godzilla was cross-eyed. That was so funny. You know,
he's had LASIK since then.
Yeah, that's right. And then he starts off roaring, and then he ends up going, "Dude." That part was so cool. I was totally expecting to see the back of the suit open and see some dude back there. I was hoping that was going to happen, but it didn't. But no, it was cool. I really liked it. I thought it was cool. And then I think for the time it was made, with them using like the miniatures for the cars and the trains, I thought that was really creative. I'm always fascinated by that. You know, I mean, you look at it now and it's like, oh, that looks like crap. But really, if you think about it, just the creativity to be able to do that, make it look somewhat real for the time period, was amazing.
Exactly. And you know, you didn't have the technology then, so movies were so much more like filmed. They were kind of like filmed stage plays.
Yeah.
And for a filmed stage play, I thought that was brilliant.
Well, there's something weird that in the monster films like that with Godzilla and even Gamera, which I've just been watching a ton of recently, they do a lot of the same stuff. It's amazing that you watch it and you can see that it's a Matchbox type car driving down the street, or it's a car building. But somehow, if you would see that in a movie now, you'd be like, oh, this looks like crap. But you watch that movie then and you somehow accept it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think twice about it. You're like, destroy that. you're not looking at it as like, that's the stupidest looking thing I've ever seen. You're waiting for that to be destroyed. You know that.
It's like in the original where the fire truck comes by and gets knocked over, and it's just so obviously like this little toy.
I think what it is you see that and you know that they built that to destroy it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so it's
true.
Like, you're like, oh, that truck's going to be destroyed. Or that,
it's like destroy that bridge all is toys.
A, yeah, that bridge is a goner. I have to say, one of my favorite moments of getting to see this with my wife, with her for the first time, and I had never seen it on the big screen, and I don't know for sure if I had it before this, had ever seen the Japanese cut.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember, but you know, you go into stuff like this, and luckily for me, my wife has a very open mind on movies, and will watch, you know, really stupid things like the Death Spa and Deathbed, Deathbed and things like that. But she appreciates some of them. There's others that she doesn't. But you know, you go into a movie like the old Godzilla, knowing that he's going to be cross-eyed and kind of silly looking, and you know, I know that she'll find the greatness of it, even if she doesn't like the film.
Uh-huh.
But my favorite part of seeing this together is I take it for granted that I already knew everything that Godzilla can and can't do.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't surprised when his scales started glowing and he was blowing his fire. She had no idea he could do that.
Oh, nice.
So I look over at her face, and I swear to you, it was like a five-year-old. And she's going, she's like, oh, what?
He can do that too?
And we come out of the theater and she goes, I had no idea he could blow fire.
It's like a fire-breathing dragon. It was the most amazing thing ever.
Nice.
And I swear to you, I couldn't even watch the movie at that point. I'm looking at her face and she's got this big look on her face like she just saw the sun for the first time. I'm like, this is the most awesome thing ever.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. I was going to say, that was one of my favorite parts. The other thing, though, that I did like was just the social commentary on the nuclear bombing.
Oh,
in Japan.
Yes.
And that's, you know, something I think that's lost in the American version.
Yeah,
it's totally,
I mean,
lost in the American version.
It's kind of brought up about, you know, radiation and stuff, but I don't think it was as poignant as the Japanese version telling their own story of the bombing there created this or whatever. It's amazing.
The whole thing's a metaphor for all that, and they make that point to say if we keep doing this crap, it's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know. But also the one of the things that struck me in seeing the original Japanese version was things that I'm fairly certain I've not had a chance to try to track down the American version and watch it, but I would suspect that the American version cut out the scene on the train where one woman, you know, the reports about Godzilla are coming over the radio or what have you, and one woman is talking to this group on the train about how, I survived Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think that was probably, let's put Raymond Burr over that because that's hitting too close to home.
Yeah, because they were talking about, I think they're talking about evacuating, or they might have to evacuate the city. And somebody is saying, I don't want to do that. And she said something to the effect of, I survived Hiroshima. My life is precious, and I would do it.
And then, of course, the train gets eaten by Godzilla.
So. Yeah, yeah. I think
the other thing that really makes the original work and the new one work is the fact that they both films took themselves seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
So they didn't try to say, look, dudes, we're making a, you could easily have said, and they've done that with so many of the other Godzilla movies, the Gamera movies, all these other monster movies where they're like, look, we know this is stupid. We've got models. We've got a guy running around in a rubber dragon suit. Let's just have fun. But instead, they like, this is a terrifying creature. He's destroying our city. It's a metaphor for the nuclear bomb or Hiroshima and all this stuff. This is some fucked up shit.
Right.
So, and it, with the exception of that one lady that kept crying, the one age in the original that kept crying but always looked like she was laughing. With the exception of that, I mean, it's the performances played off of it too. That it was about the people. It wasn't always about. That's the misconception, is everybody always thinks a Godzilla movie's about Godzilla, and it's not. It's about the people.
Right.
Yeah, well, the dealing best with... ones are about the people dealing with, and one of the most poignant things in the original, which I'm, again, fairly certain must have been excised from the American version, was that woman with her children.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
When Godzilla's attacking the city, and she's like, we'll be with Daddy soon. And like, God!
Corner.
Holy crap! I don't remember that.
God.
Yeah, then you feel guilty because you're over there like, crush that building, crush that. Yeah, oh, that's, no, I'm right. Sorry, no, you're dead, yeah. Dead.
God. Yeah, it was very wow. And you think about you think that
lost in the American version.
That the war itself was within, with the exception of the little kids, everybody who was participating in that movie's lifetime. So,
yeah,
I mean, this
not
is...
that long ago that, and the idea of going to see a movie where Japanese cities are destroyed wholesale, I mean, is that too soon?
Yeah, I mean, that had to be a little awkward.
And the funny thing is, seeing it in Japanese, it hit home for the first time. I was kind of vaguely aware of when it was made and all that. But, when you see it in the original unadulterated form, except, I guess, for the addition of subtitles.
Yeah.
For the benefit of those of us who don't speak Japanese. But, it really, for the first time, hit home that this was made not too terribly long after the end of World War II.
Right.
And this was sort of like, a lot of the, albeit you've got a giant monster running through the city, it had to hit a little close to home for looking a lot like how things looked when it was warfare that was destroying the city.
I
really wish there was some kind of a video or reaction, and I'm sure there's something somewhere from when that movie was released, to see the people that saw it and how much it might have affected them. And not only just because of the obviously emotional impact between the war stuff, but seeing something like that on screen that wasn't done before, and seeing it and being like, what the hell? It's like when we see something you know, some horror film and it's never been done that way and everybody comes out of it. Like when Paranormal Activity came out,
everybody's freaking out
like, oh my God, you don't understand. This was the most terrifying thing I've ever seen and blah, blah, blah.
You got the doe-eyed audience coming out.
Yeah, you know, and Blair Witch and all these stuff that, you know, that you just don't see very often. And nowadays, we may get briefly shocked about something, but it's not as much of a surprise because we can do anything now.
Right.
Back then, it was like, you know, look, somebody's going to, you know, between the pitch meeting and selling this, they look, we're going to make the thing, we're going to touch it on the Hiroshima stuff, but we're going to use a dragon.
Right, right.
I can see the studio guy like, are you stupid? Mm-hmm. This ain't going to work. You know?
Something I wanted to ask, especially Drew, that I notice in older films is some of the historical stuff that they don't mean this to be a history time capsule or anything, but you kind of get out of it anyway. And a lot of the people who are celebrating, like there's the people on a party boat and people out on the beach.
Right.
A lot of the older people, the older extras, are dressed in like dress kimonos and things like that. But the young people, the teenagers, and the 20 somethings, are all dressed in Western style dresses.
Yes.
And what did you think about that? I found that fascinating.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like she was wearing like her her long 60s skirt,
right.
You know, with her. What are those little shoes? The ones that are the black and white little shoes?
The little kung fu shoes.
No, like what you would wear here with a poodle skirt. She was wearing her little white button-up shirt and her long, tight skirt. I mean, like, she was totally in the 60s here. It was very odd. It's very interesting, though, at the same time. Interesting and odd. But then, you know, in the scenes where she's coming home and she's cooking food for the father or whatever, she's already now in her other gear.
Right.
So.
Right.
That's interesting.
It's the adoption of the Western culture and the pop culture with the younger generation there that just really kind of, I don't know, it was
a striking kind of contrast that you don't think about for that period. But also, you know, one of the things about like the party boat thing that goes back to kind of some of the nods that the modern, this new Godzilla gave to the original, that made it kind of a neat thing to get to see the original beforehand, about a week before Catherine and I saw the new one, was the things like the, you know, everybody's out there partying on Party Beach when Godzilla's about to arrive. Mm-hmm. It's like, somebody tell him, you know?
Yeah, did y'all not see the other movie?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I really loved about the new one, that they, you know, not to necessarily segue into the new one yet, but that they didn't make it a direct sequel to the original, but they kind of did.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, they didn't say, we're following up the sequel. It was still very cryptic about what might have happened, but it was obviously the director was saying, look, 1954 wouldn't happen, okay? Get over it.
Yeah.
And here's what we're going to do this again without actually having to talk about the original.
Well, I like that they found a way to also give you a tremendous amount of exposition
mm-hmm.
at the very beginning of the movie. We don't have to go through Godzilla's origin. It's all implicit. If you can't figure out that, you know, this is supposed to be like, you know, back in the 40s or 50s and they're trying to get Godzilla blowed up mm-hmm. and then, you know, fast forward to the present day, then you really don't need to be going to see anything science fiction because you don't have the capacity for the science end of things.
Well, see, and I love the fact...
Or the fiction end of things.
In the story aspect, that they gave Godzilla a purpose, basically being Mother Nature's enforcer.
Yeah.
And it opens up, it's such a simple idea that on the surface seems stupid, but when you see him act as an animal with a sole purpose to stop these other animals that shouldn't be out there.
Yeah.
That it gave him a purpose more so, and he's not trying to destroy people, he's not trying to destroy our cities. Our shit's
just
Our shit's in his way.
He can't get to the monster without knocking over a few dozen.
One of my favorite visuals is, you know, he kept basically avoiding hitting the aircraft carriers and stuff. And when he finally dives under that one, because it, in my view, is there was something in his way, so he's swimming underneath it.
Yeah.
But when he comes up, he destroys all those ships that happen to be in his way again on the other side. Yeah, because they weren't as big.
He doesn't realize the physics and the displacement because he's just a monster.
Yeah, and they never made him, you know, they give him...
He doesn't have the benefit of school.
Well, you know, and they gave him that one kind of, maybe more than once, but that one big thing at the very end when they kind of humanized him when he wakes up.
Yeah.
And he's leaving and you can see he kind of looks at the people it almost to say, all right, I took care of shit, you're on your own.
And he's leaving. No blowing me up again, got it?
Yeah, without ever doing the stupid winking or nodding at him and giving that campy...
Or like leaning really close in to a cowering group of people and just kind of giving a little...
Yeah, because I was so afraid they were going to... Because that's one of the things... I know a lot of the hardcore fans love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I've always hated when they make him more connected to the people.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that he's an animal.
That's Gamera's shtick.
Yeah, and I don't really like it in there either, the hero of the children bullshit. He's a fucking turtle. But this somehow unexplainably has jets that come and spin him in a circle. It's awesome to watch. Yeah. It makes no freaking sense. But like
Which makes him the best turtle ever.
Exactly. But I did love that they kept the animal nature of all the creatures. Even the other creatures weren't necessarily trying to kill the people.
Yeah, they were just going around trying to feed and breed. Basically.
Yeah, they were just wreaking havoc like any animal that gets out, you know. And I was really concerned that they were going to take this direction, this cliched, you know, oh, Godzilla's coming and he's the hero of the people and the people, you know. And I like that the... Even though it was obvious that he was trying to hit him, you know, the people were still freaking out and trying to kill him. And there was never a moment when they suddenly go, you know, the Asian, you know, Ken Watanabe was the only one that's like, he's trying to put things in balance, leave him alone and let them fight. Everybody else was like, are you seeing this big ass destroy our city? We can't just let him fight, stupid. You know?
Well, it was the first time a Godzilla movie ever made a lick of sense to me, because not that, you know, otherwise it's perfectly logical, but I can, what I'm getting out of it is Godzilla used to live in a world where these mantis creatures were just freaking everywhere, and he was just totally sick of them and hates them to the core, and he hears that the lovey dovey call of one of these, and you know, if you let two of them breed, you end up with like six or seven dozen, and he's not going to let that happen.
Well, basically what it is Godzilla cannot get any because there is not another Godzilla, and he's like, well, I'm not getting any.
There's no Ladyzilla.
Yeah, he's like, if I'm not getting any, hell no, y'all aren't getting any. And so they all need to die.
I've seen some people at conventions that look like Ladyzillas.
Wow.
Oh, goodness.
That's
funny. Well, on this, the new one, I thought it was interesting that the nuclear effects this time was the meltdown in Japan, which is, again, another historical fact that they used to explain where the creature thing came from or whatever. So I always find those things smart.
I think the real lesson here is you need to keep anything nuclear away from Japan.
So I think it's very cool anytime a movie uses true historical facts or things that have happened to weave in the story of where the creature came from. So I like that they use the recent nuclear meltdown in Japan as what gave birth to the creatures.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's a good
point.
A good source for that.
It adds a sense of realism to something, you know, that allows it to have a connection with the real world, even though it, you know, it's patently impossible.
And it's sort of the
How dare you, sir?
Just like X-Men were in World War I or whatever.
I knew she was going to go there. and you know what? But without going into full X-Men tangent, she hasn't seen Days of Future Past yet. Yeah. So I haven't told her the new historical connection.
Just like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is real too.
And
well, that one is real because it's actually.
Yeah, that's why he was killed by the vampires.
It was based on undiscovered evidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have the book, so it's got to be real. All right, moving on to Godzilla again.
Okay.
My only issue I have with the new Godzilla movie, I loved it. Mm-hmm. And, well, before I go into the issues, One of the things that I loved that a lot of people I hear harping on it, and I don't understand why, if they're actually a fan of Godzilla, to me that means they're probably clearly more fans of the Godzilla versus Mothra movies and Mechagodzilla and all those kind of films, that a lot of them are complaining about the whole teases. You know, you get three or four fights that are teased. They take you right to the edge of the thing, and then they close the elevator, or they show it on TV.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I thought that was so awesome, because they keep dragging you in.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's, you know, and it's, I don't understand why these people don't grasp storytelling.
I think it's because, you know, if you look at things like Destroy All Monsters, it was just, you know, giant rubber monster slap fight.
Right.
And, you know, this is actually trying to take that idea of you know, the original movies, okay, you have this ridiculous rubber suit monster guy, but we're going to take ourselves enough seriously that we get away with it. This is sort of like, you know, the modern equivalent of that is, you know, nobody really believes any of this CG or practical effect crap is real, right, or any kind of special effects crap is real, but you tell a good story, it makes it real.
Right.
Right. Well, and it's
no different.
I'm sorry. It baffles me when, because if you had made that same movie, and it's all these same people that bitch about the same shit, if you make the movie and the movie was 2 hours of just Godzilla fighting monsters,
right,
they'd be like, oh, it was awesome to look at, but it had no story.
Yeah.
Transformers.
Yeah, then they're like, well, we had to keep following. They call it Godzilla, but we're just following these people around. And you don't get Godzilla till the end. And I'm like, have you ever seen a Godzilla movie?
Yes.
Have they ever seen any movie?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I love that even though in the trailers we've seen Godzilla, there's a Fiat commercial, we've seen Godzilla. We've seen Godzilla hundreds of times over the years in different films.
Yeah.
The posters, there's no mystery of what he looks like in the new movie, in the old movies, but they still made an effort in the film to give an epic first visual shot.
Yeah.
Of him, and somehow still
is putting you, the audience, you know, in the midst of the story.
Well, it's
like the characters in the story. Not everybody gets to just sit there and like in a lounge chair watching Godzilla fight. Most people are running away.
Well, I agree with Bobby. I mean, you know exactly what he looks like, but when you see the fins, just the fins poking up out of the water, you're like, ooh, yes. there he is.
Well, that moment when he first comes full body out of the water and it pans from his feet up his body and you get the yelling scream thing he does, it's still like me personally being somebody who's a huge Godzilla fan, when that started panning up and you realize you're about to finally see Godzilla in all his awesome glory, and as it pans up, you realize they got him right with each
moment.
And you're like, you know, you have immediate flashes to 1998 Godzilla and everything that pissed you off, and then you're flashing to the 1954 Godzilla and his cross eyes and how awesome he was. And then you see him and he roars, and it's like turning back into the five-year-old that, you know, or the little kid that first saw Godzilla that thought was so amazing, and like my wife seeing the fire the first
time.
Exactly. Like, it was that moment, and I'm like, it's amazing how that just shows like some just brilliant cinematography to set that scene that you already know is going to happen. You already know what you're going to get. There was no mystery to it.
Right.
But they're so epic the way he pulled it out. Like, even the audience when we saw it at the screening started cheering.
Yeah, they were cheering.
You know, and I'm like, and your first thought is like, why are you cheering? You already knew this. But that just shows how awesome it was put together.
It was a happy moment.
You know, and it's been the first time in a long time that I've been to a screening or a movie or any kind of like that, that I had, you had that much physical response in the audience. Yeah. Between that one and when his, you know, you get almost at the end of the movie and his scales start glowing, you're like, holy shit, it's about to happen. I was so happy they waited so long to do that, because I know some people that were like, they should have done that early in the film, because you know, I was going to be mad if they almost pissed me off. I'm like, they didn't almost piss you off. The movie wasn't over, jackass. They almost piss you off if the movie's credits are rolling and then it does an end credit scene where scales light up and blow fire. Yeah. But,
well, my one of my happy moments is when he offs one of the two bug critters and blows fire down its neck.
Oh, I love that because, you know, first he grabs the thing and starts to crack its mouth open, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going King Kong on us.
Right.
And then it's like, hey, bite me, King Kong. Let's see you belch atomic fire down somebody's throat.
Well, I think one of my favorites is when the thing grabs onto his tail, and he like spins around and just slams his entire tail and the creature and everything into the building.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's about damn time. Use that tail for something more than dragging your ass.
And they had the checklist, the Godzilla checklist, as far as I'm concerned. They had the little kid in the striped shirt and the hat.
Right.
You've got to work him in there somewhere.
You've got to have a spridle in there somewhere.
It's not Godzilla until he's eaten either the train or the subway. Mm-hmm. And he's not Godzilla until he's stomped out at least four or five really nice bridges.
And I like that even though they kept him animalistic, that like when stuff happened that annoyed him, mm-hmm. he still had that look like your dog gives you. Like you bump into him and he looks at him like, what the hell, man? You know, but not so much. Yeah, but not so much that it was stupid.
Yeah, well, they made him an intelligent animal. Like, a dog's a good example of that. Where, you know, it's intelligent but still an animal.
Right. It gives you that look. Like, I can't tell you how many times, like, you walk past, you know, like, I walk past the dog and, like, I bump him and he looks at me like, you know I'm here, right? You know? You know, and when, like, I think it was when they were shooting him with machine guns at one point. Yeah. Looks at him like, you do know how big I am, right?
Yeah, what part of invulnerability do you get yet?
You know, I just knocked down a building, right, and you're shooting me with a bullet?
Oh.
I love that when he gets his ass whooped at the end of the movie, you know, he again, it goes back to the animal side of him, is when he finally kills them and he's beaten, he literally just passes out and needs to sleep it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's so not even caring about the people around him. He's exhausted. And when he's done, he wakes up basically like, all right, I'm out of here.
You know? If he could yawn and scratch his chest, he would.
That was a scene I thought he was going to sit up.
Scratch his crotch, he definitely would. I can't reach.
What I envisioned that scene was probably going to originally happen is he was going to stand up, knock a bunch more shit over, and then just kind of fall back on his butt with his legs popped out in front of him. And kind of be hunched over just like going, hey, guy, you know.
Wow.
he did look fresh woke after he got out of his...
Well, and I think what they've done with that and allowing him to just leave at that point, you know, it comes back in the water and the establishment that he is, the whole, you know, Mother Nature enforcer, and and he just trying to keep balance to the world, whatever you want to classify it as, nature, that they've brilliantly set up a franchise to make as many movies as they want and never have to explain the story again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just have a new creature show up. It can show up for whatever the hell reason it wants, because we've established there's these giant monsters out there. And I'm sure the next time they'll probably have to bring in Monster Island of some kind to say where they're all at, because
they
can't all be underground. You know, the underground ain't that much, you know. So, but, you know, if they establish the island and things like that, then, you know, we can have unlimited amount of these movies, and Godzilla always has a purpose. As long as they don't bring in baby Godzilla,
Godzilla and son.
That's real.
Oh, God, is it really?
It is real.
Well, who has the other favorites they want to chime in with favorites?
Well, I do want to point out something. I'd be hard-pressed to call it a favorite, per se, but I must say I applaud it at the same time, is, you know, kind of going back to the trailers, you're expecting this to be a Bryan Cranston a go-go.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Act Two, he's croaked. And like, wait a minute. I thought this was his tail. Yeah. And you're kind of half expecting, oh, no, he wasn't really dead. I was just waiting for that. And it's like, no, he's dead. And Andy, who will be joining us for the X-Men thing when we do another Hey Kids Comics crossover, had a great point about, you know, his son, the character of his son, that you could have done the entire film, and I guess this is, as we're heading into complaints, I'll get to that. But I was just amazed that, you know, here was this, from the commercials, you'd have thought that Cranston was the star of the show. And that it was his story. And in fact, it's really the story of the family when you get right down to it.
It was another one of those characters that he, and we've talked about this in other movies recently, where it's one character who has very little screen time, unexpectedly, but is very pivotal to the main story. You know,
exactly.
He's the reason that everybody's kind of knows what's going on. That was my biggest beef, and it sounds like it, some of yours too.
Let's go ahead and turn the page to wines and issues.
What's my beef? What's my beef?
My biggest thing was in the when it's in the humans. Like, I don't think they were horrible. I don't think they hurt the movie anyway. But I just felt like, to me, it felt like most of them phoned it in. I didn't get a lot of...
Yeah, I kind of see that now that I'm, you know, thinking back on it.
Even Cranston, who is a brilliant actor and usually just throws himself in the role, it's almost like he looked at the script and like, man, I did Breaking Bad. This shit's easy. You know? I don't need to work at this. And then it felt like it.
I don't know. To me, it wasn't as phoned in as, say, William Hurt in Lost in Space, where, you know, you could hear the dial tone.
William Hurt, everybody in that movie phoned in.
Yeah, more so him because you expect more out of him.
Gary Oldman's the only good one in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, at least he bothered to show up and act a bit. But, you know, Hurt just sort of like, I jokingly say they just added his stuff in post-production.
Well, Drew, did you find anything about it that just kind of fell flat with you, that you knew they could have done better?
Well, I didn't like that main kid, the soldier kid. What's his name?
Johnson, Mr.
Yeah.
Jackson, whatever his name is. Yeah, he wasn't that great.
But... In fact, that was rather Andrew's complaint, is you could have done the entire film without his character, and nothing pivotal would have changed at all.
You know what the biggest issue I had, and not to cut my wife off, but knowing...
She did. No,
technically, Cole cut you off. Knowing that him and Elizabeth Olsen, who played his wife in the film, are playing brother and sister in the Avengers, it suddenly became a weird Star Wars situation.
Luckily, I don't know these things, so it didn't bother me. But yeah, he wasn't that awesome. I mean, he was okay. But I think, yeah, they could have gotten anybody to play that, and it would have been okay. Or they could have gotten someone really good to play it, and it would have been better. But it wasn't pivotal to the story. I mean, it's just interesting following him from the first creature that came up to the next creature to Godzilla. I mean, that's the only reason he was there.
Yeah.
But, well, also, as he's been described as being like the Forrest Gump, who just sort of winds up in the middle of everything.
He's supposed to be your everyman. But...
Well, and that's what that's the only big issue I had, is the cliched aspects of the people part of the story. And they did bring their people hands. But
naturally.
But the aspect of, like, you know, they set up all the beginning where they say, you know, hey, he was in Afghanistan and he was the bomb expert. And I was like, okay, well, clearly he's going to be dealing with a bomb later in this film. And, you know, then he happens to get right there where they have their nuclear bomb. And he's like, oh, well, I worked on this exact bomb. I designed such
a... What severely bothered me that I could not get around is, apparently the military is a very strict regimen of people where you have your duty, your assignment, your
duty.
Except if you're some random soldier who pretty much can hop from assignment to assignment, to, you know, pretty much go wherever the hell he wants to and report to whoever the hell he wants to and you know, hop from here to there to...
In his defense, the city was being destroyed by Godzilla. So at that point, they're like, if you're stupid enough to join, come on.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, would you like to talk to the Admiral? Sure. That's right. He'd love to take some time to, you know, talk to the foot soldier who's...
Because that would totally happen.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
I know. That
you, know they, you know they carry
that
a business 0. Card that says...
0.02 plausibility.
They carry business cards that say, hoo-ha.
It's possible that a nuclear event created these creatures, but it's not possible that a bomb expert would suddenly join a group of SEALs or army.
Thank you!
Really, somewhere in his training was halo jumping. Because that's the first
that.
Time you paratroop, that's not the first place they take you. They don't take you up to the absolute extreme of human endurance.
Well, and the fact that bomb experts aren't usually jumping out of planes.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't generally have to parachute them in.
They put you on a cargo plane and they land you at a base and then they send you in a truck or a jeep out to where the bomb is.
That's right.
They don't get you in the plane and go, okay, look, the bomb is right below us. You're going to jump right on top of it.
I'll be the first.
be ready with your needle nose pliers and your snippers so you can cut
your
that.
People hands.
hands.
I have no family members who are military. I know zero about military protocol. I really don't. But
oh,
I
can't
know,
argue
like what Drew said, that's, you know, the bomb guy isn't going to go, hey, SEALs, why don't I come be with you? And it's like, all right, sure, why, what the hell not? And
well, we were down one guy. Bob got sick, so come along.
Yeah, come on.
Bob got stepped on.
Well,
a wingman.
And speaking of Bob getting sick, that they kill the one bomb expert they have. You have the entire military force there. The one guy that can do it dies. So they're like, he's like, well, I can do it. I'm right here. Yeah. They're like, oh, okay. He said he can.
Yeah.
But
he also keeps mentioning that he wants to get back home to his family. So, maybe he's just saying he's a bomb expert so he can get a free ride to the coast.
Well, I would have been more concerned that he was like, look, I can disarm the bomb, but I want to go home. I'd have been like, do we really want to send him out? Can we trust he's not going to run?
Yeah, exactly. No. Also, I mean, how do we know he didn't kill our bomb guy?
Yeah. Exactly.
So he can get
his job.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done.
Nice. Now, the cool thing, though, about the military stuff was the interesting thing that I thought was interesting was that there are people that really do these things that jump out of planes, you know, at 30,000 feet in the air. So that, I know it's weird, but I mean that part of it was really interesting and amazing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that's genuine, but it's not the thing that, like, if you've never jumped.
Yeah, that guy wouldn't have done it, but.
Yeah, he would have, choked on the way down.
I will say that was probably one of the most badass scenes.
That was.
Not just this movie, but of any military, like, para-jump type sequence when they had the red, you know, smoked shooting out of them and they're flying through the clouds. And then not only do you get that separation of the storm clouds and the fire clouds and everything, but then when they're passing past Godzilla and bouncing off of him.
Yes, that was brilliant.
It was breathtaking to watch. It was really good.
And you know that when they made that film, that when you look at the posters, they realize, holy shit, that is a badass sequence.
Yes,
because they made an entire poster just for that picture. And that's when you know the filmmakers are like, holy shit, we are awesome.
What's nice about that also is that is one of those things that could so easily have just been one of these stupid money shots.
Yeah.
And it
I was really concerned that they were
actually a good, viable, I mean, it served a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I was afraid they were going to have him jump and all conveniently miss him going down. But the fact that they had, I think at least one bounce off of him, I think it was, maybe more than that, made it feel like it's really happening. Because, you know, they don't know where he's at, you know, until they get
exactly.
clouds.
Yeah, exactly. Jumping blind. So, yeah, the fact that, you know, this isn't like the G.I. Joe cartoon where everybody lands safely.
Whoa, that's cool. that and that he didn't just start catching people in his mouth, because that was another thing that they could have easily made him do, like where
he
starts chomping him in midair, which would have negated the entire setup of the character and his total carelessness or totally not giving a crap that we even exist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and I was really happy that they kind of skipped all that, and I other than some of the acting stuff we discussed and over that, I think everything else worked perfect.
Yeah. The military protocol was really my only major gripe.
But on the flip side, I mean, shout out and props to the military people, because there's that one part where they're like, we don't have an exit plan. Once you go in, you may not come out, and they go anyway.
We can't exactly send somebody looking for you.
Right.
Yeah. It was interesting to me, or it actually struck a chord with me, that there are people that do that every day for us.
Right.
That they go in and fight with no plans of ever coming back.
I agree. Yeah.
So hopefully when Godzilla really does come, people will go and fight for us.
Well, and you know what makes funny? It's funny you say that. I don't know if y'all saw the article or not, but there's an actual article that they interviewed some of these soldiers at gas extra stationed in Japan, that apparently they actually have an action plan if something like that was to ever happen.
Yes.
And at first I thought it was a joke, and you read it, and it's these soldiers are saying, no, they've actually have a plan, and they have trained us.
There's a Godzilla contingency?
There's a Godzilla contingency, and they said because the people of Japan had been paranoid for so long that could actually happen, that they bought into it, mm-hmm. that the military that's stationed there had to do something to show them that they were ready. So they developed the contingency plan, just like they have an actual contingency plan for the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
But see, I think that's actually a strangely good idea, because history has borne out that things that seem fantastic sometimes wind up becoming reality.
Right. Well, I'm telling you, that
plan disappeared. So, you know, there was a time when, you know, a lot of things that we enjoy today were the stuff of science fiction, and... You know, it's best to be prepared for those sorts of things. Should they somehow turn out to be true?
I think that's why we need a space invasion contingency.
Well, that plane that disappeared, I don't know. It could have been lunch meat for somebody.
Godzilla ate it.
What do you establish that Godzilla doesn't eat us and attack us? Come on, man.
Fine, whatever.
It could have been one of those cricket creatures.
It could have been Mecha Godzilla, though.
Oh, that's true.
Or just anyway.
Anyway.
Dear, you have no idea who Mecha Godzilla is, do you?
No, but I was going to say, the one thing that I did miss that was in the old movie and not in the new movie was the creepy scientist guy with the fish.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Mr. Oxygen Destroyer guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
no,
he was...
I cannot
that was the dumbest... That was... If I had any complaint about the original, that is the dumbest idea to fight Godzilla that I've ever seen.
But you fight Godzilla with a mad scientist?
Exactly. That is the stupidest thing. It was awesome, and I can't believe that it worked.
A mad scientist that was had moral internal conflict.
But see, the mad scientist didn't actually do it, remember? They stole his technology.
Yes, he was conflicted. He did not want that to fall in the wrong hands.
That's right.
He was wise enough to invent something, recognize its potential as a weapon, and... to rather than just completely destroy all of his notes and equipment and stuff, he was convinced that he could figure out a way to make this non-weaponizable because it actually served no other purpose unless you just got tired of your aquarium fish and produce them with your skeletons. It had no practical... The destruction of oxygen and water served no practical purpose for anything. Yet he was convinced otherwise.
It's one of those things is like, why would you even come up with that? Like, what was your, you were taking notes and you're like, I wonder if I could take that oxygen out of there.
Well, he was probably working on one thing and accidentally discovered something different.
But I will say, I love that visual of when it kills Godzilla in his rib cage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it just destroyed everything but his rib cage. We just got a rib cage, and that's to symbolize... That's Godzilla.
And I think it's amazing that you can do that just by removing the oxygen from water.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that removing oxygen from water causes things to turn into skeletons.
Exactly. Well, that's a given. That's what happened to pirates.
Wow.
In the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, that curse.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right.
It's because they removed the oxygen from water and they all
I didn't realize that that's how the Aztec
now you know.
Now you know.
Okay, who's
now you know
who's going to chime in and tell us whether or not they would rate how many flaming Godzillas are you going to give it between 1 and 5 and would you recommend it?
Does flaming Godzilla go roar?
Yep.
I'll let my wife go first. Go ahead, dear. Since you laughed at the joke.
I got the joke. He was effeminate.
Well, it wasn't that you got it. It was that you laughed. We're willing to laugh out loud at it. That's why.
Because it's funny when Godzilla gets roar.
With his little tiny hands.
I did the hand, too. You can't
see wow. I envisioned.
With his lizard hands.
Why the very first joke.
I envision him saying roar, and he has his little tiny hand on his face going.
Well, no, and that's why the very first joke that Cole told about him parasailing is so funny, because he can't parasail with his little hands.
He can have like a special rig with extra long.
Is that like a T-Rex making a bed?
Wow.
No. Okay, so, go ahead. Sorry.
So is he a dinosaur? A dragon, a lizard, or what?
Yes.
He's a lizard.
Dinosaur dragon lizard.
I think he's a lizard thing.
What? Okay. Anyways, I would give it 5 flaming Godzillas, and everyone should go see it, enjoy it. And if you don't get it, then you're stupid. And there are people that don't understand science fiction, and they don't get the social commentary of it. Pass the baton.
Well, I would easily give it some flaming Godzillas there. I would have to give it at least 4.5 flaming Godzillas. Is it a perfect Godzilla movie? No. Is it the closest thing we're ever going to see for now to an American Godzilla movie that's amazing and great? Absolutely. It pays a lot of tribute to its origins, to what's come before. I've read that the Japanese are complaining Godzilla is a little bit too much on the chubby side.
You know, did
you see the original Godzilla with those thunder thighs? What are you talking about?
Here's the deal, and I was going to touch on this earlier and I forgot, so I apologize for interrupting you. But the reason they're complaining his now is because he's fat body all the way through, as opposed to because his upper chest was a little thinner in the original, but. I actually said the same thing to my wife at Toys R Us when I saw the toys. I'm like, look, Godzilla's a little bit fatty in this film. But when I saw him on screen, he doesn't look that bad. He doesn't come off.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He doesn't come off fat.
The still shots, it kind of gives you the wrong impression.
Well, it's just the Godzilla body type. You gotta...
I just love that the Japanese were saying, well, you know, Godzilla, you spent too much time in America eating cheeseburgers. And then he's like, well, you know, when you're that old, your things start to spread.
Well, maybe it's just part of his, what he is. Maybe he's,
He doesn't do Taibo, obviously.
Well,
I'm sorry, Mr. Cole. Continue.
Oh, that's all right. But I think I would give it a good 4.5 flaming Godzillas because it's just, I mean, if you're a big fan of Godzilla, it has a little something for everyone. There's so many wonderful nods to everything that's come before. It delivers on so many levels. There are aspects you could do without. But for the most part, it's a pretty satisfying film and, the fact that they chose to build to get to some of the more specific Godzilla moments, mm-hmm. like having him belch flame. I like the fact that they waited so long because it made you think, oh, here we go again, just like the last time. Oh, well, it's Godzilla, but really, you know, frankly, belching atomic fire, that's just silly.
Right.
You're like, no, we're just gonna give you... We're going to give you a little bit of a tease and work our way there. And then that way, the next movie, it's just, you know, flame belching a go-go.
Well, I agree with Cole. I'm going to give it 4.5 Flamin'zillas, despite the whole military issue that I had with the protocol, which stuck in my craw for a for a monster movie, if you're going to see a monster movie, this has a lot of monster action for your monster dollar. They have many battles. They destroy a lot of stuff, and you get a whole lot of monster screen time, and that's really what a monster movie is all about. So I said, yay, go see it. Bobby, what do you say?
Well, we all know that the real reason you only gave it 4.5 was because Hugh Jackman was not naked in it, but I personally...
We all have our bar.
Exactly. But they did show Godzilla's butt for you.
Against the half.
Despite my issues with some of the acting of the people and some of the downfall, the shortcomings on that side, I still give it a 5. Because that stuff didn't stick with me. You know, I love the story. I love the direction they went with it. The visuals to it in connection to what they did with the character and where they went with it and the choices they made, you know, which I thought were fairly brave choices to do the teases so much and to stick to so much of the original story and to give it such a simplistic backstory when they could have easily tried to make it convoluted and... Mm-hmm. In hopes to make it more intelligent, I think made technically the perfect Godzilla movie. You know, maybe, you know, like Cole said, it's the most perfect one we're going to get right now. But I think this set the tone that it's possible to make a Godzilla movie that isn't actually a Godzilla movie. And they can build on that and maybe fix some of the issues with the characters, but also... We've got that kind of stuff out of the way, and we can start having more fun as long as they keep that same tone. If they start going the campy and Joel Schumacher everything, it's going to ruin it, and we'll be back to square one. But at least we'll still have this one, which I think I could easily watch this movie over and over and never get tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's a really good... I think it's going to become a classic. It's going to become a go-to. Put it in your movie collection.
I will say, and I will warn anybody that has not seen it, that if they happen to listen this far into the show and you haven't seen it, my bad. But I will say...
No, it's their bad. If they've listened this far, and we've already warned them in both text and spoken language.
I will say, and I told you in sign language with my people hands, I will say that I can understand some people's frustration of the tease factor because as a society, we're built to instant gratification. Nobody wants to wait, and nobody wants to hear the story. And in those people, you're going to be sorely disappointed because you're going to miss out. Not disappointed because you're going to not get what you want, but because you're going to miss out on a really great, complete film as opposed to just the monster fighting.
Right. Right. Well, thanks, everybody. Go ahead.
Something real funny. If you haven't, hopefully everyone's seen the movie, like y'all said, but if you didn't, go back and watch it. And look for the one soldier that's dancing because he has to go pee.
That guy's not dancing.
That annoyed the hell out of me.
He's not dancing. He's not trying to pee. Okay, here's what he's doing. You know when you stand... I know exactly what seems like...
Did y'all see that first? Did y'all see that?
I can't say that I did.
They come out of their tent. It's in the daylight. They come out of the tent. Two of the main characters are talking. There's a soldier directly behind them. And you know how when you stand still for too long, you kind of start swaying in your place?
Right.
Because that's what the guy's doing. He's swaying because he's clearly been on set standing in that one spot way too damn long. But he's not dancing, as she's put it. She makes it sound like he's doing the cha-cha. But he's swaying, but he's holding a machine gun and kind of swaying back and forth. It is funny when you see it. You can't look away.
he's doing that thing that you do when you're in retail and you're trying to keep your extremities from going to sleep.
That's what he's doing. That's exactly.
He was dancing in his pants.
I think he was just had already pooped himself because of the Godzilla situation.
It was he was just kind of trying to work it down the pant leg.
Yeah, since he was down in the desert, he's in the desert. He thought he could shake it out. Just
yeah,
leave it.
Just sort of dust over it with the.
Blame it on the military shepherd.
That's right. My gosh.
We don't have a dog here, soldier. Well, somebody did.
We had a dog until Godzilla got here.
Well, he's not the He's not the, what do you call the guards at the Queen's residence or whatever.
Oh, yeah, he's not like a beef eater.
Yeah, he's not. Well, the beef. No, it's not the beef eaters. Yeah, it's
I like beef.
Wow.
Well, there you go. That's
well,
a good,
and on that.
And I think
every good broadcast needs a few good edit points.
Let me tell you, Godzilla would be some good eating.
Well, he would feed a lot of people.
And I want to say one thing in closing for my part. When I was a kid, I had this really awesome Godzilla toy. It was like this 12-inch where his feet had like the little wheels on the bottom, and he had this rubber.
Oh, that was from the Shogun Warriors collection.
Yes, yes, where he had the little
his fist shot off.
His fist shot off. His little rubber tongue that was supposed to be fires come out, and yeah. His tail. You could
had
pop
a giant lever at the back of his neck. Too.
Yes, and I tell you what, that is like one of the most depressing things that I've ever lost as far as a toy. I don't know when that disappeared. I have numerous pictures of me as a kid playing it, destroying Castle Grayskull and whatever else got in his way. The one toy that I am actually on the lookout to buy, and watching that movie actually brought back more of those memories of that toy, which, you know, as much as I love the toy, I don't think about it all the time, but when I watched that movie, all I could think about was like, damn it, I wish I had that Godzilla toy. That thing is so awesome. You know, so it actually had more of a, I guess, a personal hit to it besides just being a Godzilla thing that took me back to the childhood thing that's going to probably end up costing me a lot of money now.
You wouldn't have wanted to go see it at the Alamo Draft House then because they actually showed the original commercial.
Oh, I know. I probably would. I figured they would, which would have been awesome to see it, but then it would have made me twice as depressed.
Oh, and you want to know what else is depressing? The other thing that they did for the Shogun Warriors collection was a Rodan.
Oh, yeah.
my little brother had both of them.
Yeah, I had Godzilla. I don't know who got me Godzilla. I don't know where Godzilla disappeared, but if I find out which family member took it, we're going to have a problem. Matter of fact, there's going to be a call to my mother tomorrow. I'm going to find it.
Well, she still lives in the same place. It might be up in the attic.
We moved two or three times since that time.
Oh.
I'm sure she... What in the hell just happened?
I don't...
Godzilla just stepped on us.
It's a sign.
All right, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right. Thank you, everybody, for a fantastic show. Everybody, get out there, go see Godzilla again. Pick up some fun and cheesy older Godzilla movies and have yourself a marathon, and just enjoy the heck out of monster movies.
And if you own an original Mattel Shogun Warriors Godzilla. Then
please reach out to us.
Yeah. Well, actually, just go ahead and just play with it like crazy, just to depress Bobby further. Send us pictures of you.
Send us pictures of you and the toy that Bobby doesn't have.
I hate everyone on the show.
Cole, where should they send those pics?
They can send their photos and any other correspondence about this or any other show on the JCU to jcumail@yahoo.com. They can find us, of course, the Jedi Cole Universe at jedicole.com, where there are myriad other podcasts, including following hot on the heels of this one, a crossover, as I mentioned before, with Hey Kids Comics, where we... Andrew and I joined Catherine and Bobby for a discussion of X-Men Days of Future Past, the next to the last of our crossovers. Guardians of the Galaxy being the last Hey Kids Comics crossover.
Fantastic. Drew, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a delight.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hopefully we can have you on the show again soon, so we'll have to... we'll have to get you on here again sometime.
Okay.
And, Bobby, why don't you pimp some of the 1,500 different things that you do for mankind on a daily basis?
Well, before Colin decided to put the word out to make me more depressed, I used to draw comics for Jedi Cole Universe. The You Are Here comics that currently, our current one actually is in theme with this week's show.
That is so true. Check out Sunday's latest edition.
It features Mothra, and that's all we'll say.
That's right.
We also have a collection of our first year, it's Your First Year Here, You Are Here, Volume 1, that is not only available on the Jedi Cole Universe or reaching out to myself through Facebook or wherever you can to get a cone copy. You can go to Urban Legends in Mesquite to pick up a copy, and I believe, I don't know the name of the other store in Austin.
Tribe Comics
in Austin.
Texas now has that available, and we are getting that book into more and more stores as time goes on.
And it looks like it's going to be showing up at Keith's Comics in the near future. And also still have my website, despite not updating the comics very often, laststopcomic.com. And you can check out theexaminer.com. Just look for my name, Bobby Blakey, for movie reviews, TV reviews, martial arts, and comics coverage.
Sweet. And we'll see you next time on... What'd you think?